I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, a possible breakthrough in the Boston Marathon bombings. UAE authorities arrest members of a believed Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist cell. Concerns about security during the upcoming Iraq elections.
The regular army units are capable of formal security measures, but not particularly effective ones in dealing with what is now a very experienced group of attackers.
It's all ahead. A solemn interfaith memorial service has been held in a Boston cathedral to remember those injured or killed in the Boston Marathon bombings. Two deadly explosions Monday alongside of the famous Boston running event left three people dead and wounded more than 170. President Barack Obama spoke during the memorial service today.
It was a beautiful day to be in Boston. A day that explains why a poet once wrote that this town is not just a capital, not just a place. Boston, he said, is the perfect state of grace. And then, in an instant, the day's beauty was shattered. A celebration became a tragedy. And so we come together to pray and mourn and measure our loss. But we also come together today to reclaim that state of grace, to reaffirm that the spirit of this city is undaunted, and the spirit of this country shall remain undimmed.
President Obama at the Interfaith Memorial Service for Victims of the Boston Marathon Bombings. He said all Americans are touched by the city's tragedy. A White House spokesman told reporters on Air Force One that the president will meet with families of those killed or wounded, along with some of the first responders to the tragedy while in Boston. Authorities looking into the terrorist attacks say they have made significant progress in the investigation. Photos released by the FBI depict fragments of the two bombs, including twisted pieces of a metal container, along with wires and batteries. Investigators are also examining the people shown in photos of the scene. VOA correspondent Jerome Sokolowski is in Boston following the story.
But it does seem to have been a breakthrough in the investigation. Investigators say that a surveillance camera captured images of a suspect leaving a black bag of the type that they believe had one of the pressure cookers inside at the location of one of the bomb blasts. It seems that they have an image of a person doing that, but they haven't assigned a name to that person yet. They're still looking for this individual.
Now, there was a lot of speculation on Wednesday that an arrest was imminent, that perhaps someone had been arrested. That led to a strong rebuke by the FBI field office in Boston. What did they say, and why are they cautioning everybody not to jump to conclusions?
Well, there were several reports saying that an arrest had been made, and there were even certain descriptions of a person who had been supposedly arrested, and people were even waiting at the courthouse here for that person to be brought in. But then shortly afterward, the FBI said that no arrest had been made whatsoever. It could be just confusion. It could have been sources who didn't know what they were talking about. But you also have to keep in mind that in an investigation like this, the authorities are very careful about what they say, and sometimes what they say is also intended not just for the public, but for the suspects that are out there to try to lead them to believing that they're safer than they really are.
I was watching a lot of the Twitter traffic on Wednesday, and it was burning up the Internet. Of course, there was a lot of speculation, and I guess we should caution people not to trust everything you see on Twitter because you don't know the source of the information.
So that's the case here. That was the case during the Superstorm Sandy in New York. After catastrophes, tragedies, big news events, there's lots of information out there. Some of it is very useful, but a lot of it is not.
Correspondent Jerome Sokolovsky in Boston. Security experts say Americans are much safer from terrorism since the attacks on September 11, 2001 that killed nearly 3,000 people. However, they say the deadly bombings during the Boston Marathon underscore the difficulty of protecting people against an attacker determined to kill civilians. Correspondent Meredith Buell reports from Washington for VOA Television.
Following the September 11 terror attacks, the country's security professionals made enormous strides in protecting civilians, experts say. Dozens of plots have been prevented, usually before there is danger to the public.
If you ask, if the question is America a harder target for transnational terrorism than it was before 9/11, the answer is you bet.
James Carafano is a security expert at the Heritage Foundation.
Most of it's been based on good intelligence, good proactive counterterrorism efforts, finding people that are interested in doing violence, getting inside, getting information about them, and taking them down before they're a threat.
Carafano credits the success in part to the FBI's shift from a national law enforcement agency to an organization that made counterterrorism its top priority. He also says the Department of Homeland Security has become skilled at securing airports and the nation's borders. But the Boston bombings show how difficult it is to protect the public from all attacks. Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
I think you have to accept that this kind of an attack sometimes is going to be possible. And we've had a number of cases in recent years where attackers almost succeeded.
The last major attack occurred when Army Major Nadal Hassan allegedly killed 13 people at Fort Hood, Texas in 2009. He had connections to Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. But a number of bomb plots have failed or have been foiled. Several months after the 9/11 attacks, Richard Reed failed to detonate a shoe bomb on an airliner. And on Christmas Day 2009, the so-called underwear bomber failed to ignite explosives on a flight to Detroit. That year, authorities arrested an Afghan immigrant plotting to bomb the New York subway. 3 years ago, New York's Times Square was evacuated after the discovery of a car bomb. While analysts say officials have learned how to protect people in large public gatherings, there's a limit to what is practical and effective. Again, James Carafano.
They're not going to necessarily stop a very determined attacker. You really have to rely on finding that person and stopping them before they get there.
As counterterrorism officials say, they have to be perfect all the time, while terrorists have to succeed only once. Meredith Buell, VOA News, Washington.
Congratulations to the winner of the VOA Photo Contest. During the month of February, we invited listeners from around the world to submit photos depicting the spirit of the communities in which they live. There were more than 4,500 entries from 110 countries. But the top prize goes to Rahan Parvez from Dhaka for his black and white portrait of an older woman protecting her grain from three hungry ducklings. To see the winner and runners-up, visit our website at voanews.com. Authorities in the United Arab Emirates have arrested seven people they say are part of an Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist cell. The official WAM news agency said today the group was planning to carry out acts in the UAE as well as to recruit others and promote Al-Qaeda. It said the seven people arrested were of Arab nationalities, but it did not give additional details. The statement also said the group was providing money and logistical support to help Al-Qaeda further its activities in the region. For insight into Al-Qaeda activity in the UAE, we spoke with Thomas Mater, Executive Director of the Middle East Policy Council.
It's a situation that is bad in the region, so therefore it can spill over into the UAE. If you may recall that one or two of the 19 hijackers on September 11th were from the UAE. The rest were from Saudi Arabia. It is possible for them to generate some support in those countries. The Saudis, the Emiratis, they cooperate with us very strenuously to root out these people. And therefore, there have been many successes in both countries. But the result has been a lot of them have been driven into Yemen, and that's really where the problem is most critical. But they could have been transiting the UAE on their way somewhere else. For example, they may have been on their way to Syria.
I'm wondering if the conflict in Syria is actually creating more al-Qaeda members.
I think it might, because basically in Saudi Arabia, in the UAE, and in Iraq, you have a lot of Sunni Arabs who are seeing their Sunni Arab brethren being bombed by a Shia, or rather Alawite, government in Syria. And the international community isn't responding the way the populations in Saudi Arabia and the UAE would like to see them intervene on behalf of the opposition, which is largely Sunni. So I think that it arouses a lot of resentment and convinces people to join al-Qaeda and convinces people to go and help there, yes.
Do you have any recommendations on controlling the al-Qaeda population?
Well, I would say that that's a complex prescription. I think it starts with the United States stepping up to the plate and finally getting serious about resolving the Arab-Israeli conflict, because the issue that creates the most anger in the Arab world, the most anger toward the United States, is our acquiescence in the suffering of the Palestinian people and our ineffective or maybe even insincere peace, quote-unquote, peace process efforts. That would be a big, big help. Then, of course, I would say that our proclivity to use military force when we don't necessarily understand the conditions on the ground, as in Iraq, created a lot more animosity for us, and it was another reason why al-Qaeda could more easily recruit people. In fact, I've seen in ministries of interior in that part of the world how they surf the internet and find the ways in which al-Qaeda is recruiting people, and they go to al-Qaeda sites. And what al-Qaeda likes to do is to show color photographs of Palestinians who've been killed or Iraqis who've been killed and to blame it on us. And that's a very, very effective recruiting tool. So I think we need to reconsider our entire foreign policy in the region.
Thomas Mater, Executive Director of the Middle East Policy Council. Iraqis are preparing to vote in provincial elections on Saturday. The vote is the first in Iraq since U.S. troops withdrew from the country in December 2011. The election has already been postponed by several months in Anbar and Nineveh provinces because of security threats. VOA's Michael Lippin spoke about the violence in Iraq with Anthony Cordesman, an analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
I think the problem that we face is the security forces have a very mixed capability. Some of the elite units are very good, but the regular army units are capable of formal security measures, but not particularly effective ones in dealing with what is now a very experienced group of attackers. The police in general, with the exception of the national police, are divided, passive, and often corrupt, and are not a particularly effective help. That means there are going to be a lot of areas which will be vulnerable, and people don't have to be attacked at the polls. You can attack the politicians, you can attack people generally running up to the election. There's a whole host of ways that various Shiite and Sunni extremist groups can continue to act out throughout the election process.
He says security forces have to consider long-term success.
It isn't simply thwarting attacks that counts. It's dealing with the attackers. And the problem is, if you are not basically creating major barriers to further attacks by reducing the threat, dealing with the success on any given day has very limited impact, particularly when day after day significant numbers of attacks do occur. We also know in general that the elite forces are very small in size. They can't cover the country. We know that many of the elements of the police are not effective. We know that the army is divided, often is focusing on Shiite areas, or is creating tension with Sunni areas rather than acting as a source of security. And we know there are deep divisions between the Arabs and the Kurds. So the reality is that this is a large, deeply divided country whose military forces are still, in many ways, recovering from the problems of the defeat in 2003 and did not get the level of continuing U.S. advice and advisory support the U.S. had attempted to provide, and that most elements of the police reverted to a relatively passive, corrupt, and ineffective state within months of the U.S. departure.
We asked how important the provincial councils are in Iraq. How much power do they have over money, for example?
They do receive money to some degree in terms of oil revenues, and that is virtually the government's only meaningful source of money. But the way it is allocated is very much under the control of the central government, which has, under the prime minister, basically begun to bypass the Ministry of Finance. You don't have, at this point, a real Minister of Finance, Minister of the Interior, Minister of Defense. The prime minister's office effectively controls those. You do not have independent provincial sources of security. The prime minister has been basically able to use temporary command appointments to take control over much of the military. He controls the counterterrorism and the other elite paramilitary security forces. And basically speaking, this gives him a great deal of authority. There still is an independent parliament. There still are strong independent provincial political figures. But within the overall structure, the prime minister has steadily been able to consolidate power where it really counts, and that's over money and armed force.
Anthony Quartisman at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.